Well, we start off every show on Cam Lincoln-Ezvick here on ESPN 102.5 The Game with Rock the Casbah. And, well, the Tennessee Titans rocked the NFL draft and shook up the entire outlook of their offense with one trade. I'm Elijah Campbell. She's Michelle Knezvik. It's Campbell Knezvik here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. For the next 2 hours, we're going to wrap our head around what the hell happened Thursday night. And then what happened last night? The Titans traded into the second round, drafted a cornerback, and then with one of their third-round picks, took a quarterback. What does this mean for Ryan Tannehill? What does this mean for the Titans offense? And we take them as serious contenders in the AFC South. Oh, and then the Nashville Predators blew a 4-0 lead after scoring 4 goals in the first 7 minutes to the worst team in hockey last night to fall to the last wild card spot, where they will now be playing the best team in the conference in the Colorado Avalanche in a best of 7 series, potentially without their goalie. Everything is totally normal here in the city of Nashville. Michelle, it's been the weirdest 48 hours of Nashville professional sports that I can recall in my lifetime. And I've at least lived in Tennessee my entire life. So I have seen some weird, and we have gotten such a heavy dose of weird in the last 48 hours. I'm afraid we can overdose from it.
Elijah, you nailed it with everything. This has been the weirdest last 48 hours. Last night was, you know, watching the draft at our draft party at 312 Pizza. And I remember thinking, I thought actually they were going to take a quarterback with their second round pick. I, in the back of my head, was like, as soon as I heard about the AJ Brown trade on Thursday night, in the back of my head, I thought, oh, maybe they're going to draft a quarterback. And then second round goes, and it goes a little bit longer, and we're not seeing any quarterbacks off the board. And then when the Titans had their third round pick, in my head, I was like, they're picking Malik Willis. This is happening. And I was actually shocked at how long it took for another Desmond Ridder obviously went to the Falcons before, but I was pretty shocked that it took that long. And every time a pick came up in my head, I justified, oh, I could see them maybe drafting a quarterback. Every single one passed. I feel like it was the cornerback draft. I feel like the second round was really heavy in the secondary. And and it was just funny because we talked about this quarterback class and how we just weren't sure, right? We're like, maybe there'll be one quarterback in the first round, which we saw Kenny Pickett go 20 to the Pittsburgh Steelers, just hopping right over across the street from Pitt to the Steelers facility. Mm-hmm. But
not a long drive there.
I was extremely, I don't know. I just like, I thought, you know, somebody will still draft a quarterback early in the second round, but wow. Who would have thought the Titans would be able to get Malik Willis that late in the draft?
Right. I mean, this is a guy who was mocked in some mock drafts that you'd see from like reliable sources that he would be going possibly top 10. Top 10, he didn't go until 84. Like, it is insane, the lack of quarterbacks taken in this draft. I mean, in the year of our Lord 2022, Michelle, we had two running backs taken before the second quarterback was taken after 70 selections in the NFL draft. You'd see this season.
Well, also a record 6 wide receivers in the first round.
And we had, 17 after the first 2 days? And that's the thing about this draft too. It's a wide receiver heavy draft. That's where the value was. Like, there were so many good receivers in this that if you had a problem with your receiving core, this is the draft class to be able to replenish that receiving core. And I thought that's what the Titans could have done in the first round. I didn't foresee them trading their best wide receiver for a player who plays a little like him. So that's not something I expected to see at all. And quite frankly, when I first saw that the trade went down, my initial thought was, what the hell are they doing? And it's a little more justified now, but man, I do not love trading your best offensive passing game weapon in a league which you have to be able to keep up with the Joneses when it comes to airing it out and passing the ball downfield or being able to have a competent passing game at all. I mean, you know, it doesn't even have to be downfield. You have to be able to pass the ball in this league to survive. You already have a quarterback that you don't like. You shouldn't honestly feel insanely confident that you're going to make it to an AFC Championship game or Super Bowl with him alone. You want to surround him with as many weapons as possible, and you trade the best wide receiver you have on your team. I don't want to say I don't get it, because it's not exactly true, because Teron Davenport's reporting last night was that the Titans weren't willing to go over about $20 million or so. But when AJ Brown told him that, when AJ Brown told Teron that he only won 22, that it might be a little misleading, because the number that Teron also heard from another very trusted source was that the number was over $25 million, meaning he was going to get paid around the ballpark of Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill money, which A.J. Brown is not Devontae Adams or Tyreek Hill in the slightest bit. A.J. Brown is a very good receiver. A.J. Brown is a top 15 receiver. You can have an honest debate as to whether or not, when fully healthy, A.J. Brown is a top 10 receiver. So I would not justify paying him north of $25 million a year. However, I think you got to almost have a more honest effort here to get him there. I know they probably tried a lot. They probably tried everything they could. And from what it sounds is that AJ Brown did cut off communication with the Tennessee Titans for like, what, 3 weeks is what I think was what I was reading. That if you're cutting off communication with 3 weeks, I mean, there really isn't much of a good faith negotiation on that side, but it's a total gut punch to this team right now. I think they're going to take a step back offensively, which means we're looking down the barrel of a 9 or 10 win season.
Well, and as far as losing AJ, that was Ryan Tannehill's safety net.
Oh my God.
Their connection. And you think about, the one that sticks out in my head is the San Francisco game when they played the 49ers, and it was right the fourth quarter, and Ryan Tannehill is just slinging it down the field. But him and AJ have such a good connection because they have worked together for these past couple of years, and they've really grown together. AJ's grown as a receiver with him. They have just a great connection on the field. And they've made that clear to the media. They've made it clear that, you know, they love working together. And even Jim Wyatt was on Robbie and Rex Road last week, I think, before the draft. And he said that AJ was in Florida working with Ryan Tannehill. And once he said that, I think in the back of my head, I just thought, okay, like they'll wait a little bit longer. They'll kind of go back and forth. They won't make a rash decision. In their head, they know they're going to sign AJ. It's now just a matter of, you know, back and forth negotiations and things like that. And then I was completely shocked. I mean, we were at our draft party on Thursday at Third and Home, and Robbie Stanley texted Chase Rexroad and I and said, in all caps, AJ Brown is traded. And I'm looking for Chase thinking, is this a joke? Like, what? And then I get the Adam Schefter notification, and oh. I think the best response to it was on our draft show, Chris Sanders, for about like 4 minutes, just like, wow, wow, wait, wow.
That man I was think so confused. It looked like you gave him a Sudoku puzzle and then he never saw one in his life, and you told him to solve it right there. I mean, the guy was, poor Chris, like he was just it like blindsided by this news. And I think we all were. Like, that's the thing. Even Derek Mason was surprised. And Derek's the one who's been talking on Darren Donick and Chase all week long about, don't be surprised if something happens, because if he's working out with Jalen Hurts, that might mean something. Cause he said when he played, that's how that kind of stuff happened. Like when players demand trades under the table, a lot of that is because they're comfortable working out with another quarterback, or they're like comfortable playing with another quarterback. And Derek kind of alluded to that for most of the week. So I think he was probably less surprised, but like, I think he was still kind of in shock at the gall that it takes to be able to pull the trigger on that move, especially to only get their first round pick and an additional fourth. Like it seems like such little compensation for a guy who's possibly a top 10 wide receiver in the league. That's where the big surprise comes from for me.
Well, and also too, I think right after this trade happened, there's a lot that has come out. Right. So Teron Davenport has done a phenomenal job, right, covering this story, talked to AJ after the trade, getting a lot of, you know, sources and really trying to get to the bottom of it. So what happened, right? What happened in that room? I mean, and we'll never know exactly how it went down, but I feel like we've got AJ's side of the story right now, and then we've got Mike Vrabel and John Robinson's kind of side of the story, right? Through his sources, and you can, whatever they say at the press conference, obviously it's going to be, you know, PR savvy. They don't want anybody to really know like how it happened, but basically the outcome that I've kind of come with is that they couldn't find a number. AJ says that they only were willing to go to about 16 million, which I think
20 is, including incentives, but like 16 million, like guaranteed year is still, I mean, that almost doesn't sound realistic. That sounds like an unrealistic starting point to even negotiate with.
Well, and that is exactly what I was going to say, Elijah, especially with this wide receiver market right now. I mean, do you think you even have a shot of keeping AJ if you offer him that? You know, he's going to almost feel disrespected that he's being offered this. But I just feel like right now it's a lot of he said, she said, and AJ tweeting, it's not my fault and all this stuff. It's like, okay, let's just take a step back for a second. And, you know, Titans fans on Friday morning, I thought they would have been really, really outraged. Whereas I feel like, I don't know if they're just trying to, you know, soften the wound, be like, this is good. Yeah. We have more draft picks and we have more money to spend. And I don't know. I can see both sides. And obviously this is going to be a majority of what we're talking about for our entire show today. It has been pretty much on every, you know, sports outlet here at Nashville, because a lot of it's hard to fathom. I think I ruled out in my head that he'd be traded. And then on draft night, it's like, wow, you just lost your, I mean, your second best, I'll say Derrick Henry still holds that top spot, but your second best offensive player on this team. And if people want to relate it to, you know, the Packers with Devontae Adams and the Chiefs with Tyreek Hill, well, here's the difference. They have insane quarterbacks that they need to pay. And I think the salt in the wound right now for the Titans fans is that you're paying Ryan Tannehill, which hinders being able to pay AJ Brown. Whereas the Chiefs and the Packers, you've got a Hall of Fame quarterback, well, at least Rodgers, Hall of Fame quarterback, Patrick Mahomes right on that way. I mean, he's still young, he's going to be. So it's, I trust Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes to throw to, I don't want to say any receiver, but I trust them more than Ryan Tannehill. I mean,
anonymous receivers almost, because you just don't know who those dudes are. Like, and you make a good point though. Like, is Ryan Tannehill a guy that's going to make other receivers better? I don't think he's that kind of guy. He was a receiver or a quarterback coming into this offseason that, even though he had that horrific, nightmarish performance against the Bengals, I still would trust you to get back to the exact same spot you did last year and set himself up for redemption. But not if AJ Brown's not there. Like, that's the thing. I understand maybe figuring some things out, and like I can understand maybe trading him next year, because if he's not willing to play underneath like without that extension, and like he can only hold out so long, what's he gonna do, hold out the entire year and miss an entire year of playing? Like, yeah, the Green Bay Packers did the same thing with Aaron Rodgers. Like, I'm not showing up to training camp, and the Packers hardballed him, and he still, you know what he did, showed up to training camp and did his damn job. Like, they eventually played hardball and forced him to do it. You're still under contract. Like, you can still make these guys play. And these players should learn from Le'Veon Bell that if you take a year out of your prime because you don't like your contract situation, it can
values go in rest
of your career. Your value will tank. So it's a bad business decision to just not show up. So I don't necessarily buy the notion where it's like AJ Brown says, I'm not showing up without a new contract, and he wouldn't have actually done it. Call the bluff, like most other teams in the NFL do, and you figure that stuff out later. And then if you want to trade them after the year. But you're in a championship window right now, and that window closes, because this offense without Ryan Tannehill and AJ Brown together is going to look a lot different. While Derrick Henry might be the best player on this offense, AJ Brown is arguably the most important player on this offense, because if you don't have a passing game in the NFL in the year of our Lord 2022, you are not winning your division. You are not making the playoffs. You don't have a shot. And teams will load up the box and make Ryan Tannehill beat you with Treylon Burks and Robert Woods. And if that's what's going to happen this year, I think we might be staring down the barrel of an 8-10 win season at best. So it's going to be a mess, I think, at least to start the season. And there's still a whole lot to get into. We want your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025. Taking your calls and text, as well as continuing the discussion as what is this trade going to do for the outlook of the season? We'll talk about that more on the other side. Is listening to Campbell Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Campbell Knezovic here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Titans trade A.J. Brown to the Philadelphia Eagles for the 18th pick, and they take Treylon Burks. Treylon Burks, a very productive receiver at Arkansas. But is that going to be enough to keep this Titans offense afloat without their best receiver and with Robert Woods coming off an ACL tear and with Ryan Tannehill not being anywhere in sight for OTAs? I don't know. Michelle, that was what I ended with on the last one, on the last segment, where I think it does kind of feel like the Titans are looking at another 8-10 win season. The defense can still carry them. However, it's very hard to replicate great defense year on a year-to-year basis in the NFL. I mean, you've seen some defenses in this league be great one year, and then if they don't force a ton of turnovers the next year, or if the sack numbers go down because teams are able to quick pass, you know, the hell out of them each game, then maybe those numbers go down too, and the team's overall defensive numbers kind of sink down towards the median. I think that's a possibility with this Titans team. They still have a mean defensive front. I think that defense is going to keep them in a lot of games. But if the New Orleans Saints, the team that I watch on a regular basis, taught you anything, it's that you can have a bad offense and a defense can still win you 8-9 games. Mm-hmm. Do I think the Titans offense is bad? No. I do think they will be very, very average. If last year's any indication on how this team can look without A.J. Brown, I think it is going to be very difficult, especially if it does take Ryan Tannehill a long time to develop any kind of chemistry with Burks, who he allegedly hasn't even texted yet, and Robert Woods, who is still recovering from ACL surgery.
And, I mean – also, too, with all this A.J. Brown stuff happening, as far as, you know, Treylon Burks, that is an enormous amount of pressure.
It's too much.
Into this team.
For one guy. Yeah.
Yeah. And although, yes, they have Robert Woods, who we've talked about for a while now, it's just a question mark. He's a solid receiver when he's healthy. But like we said, he's coming off that ACL injury and you just don't know. You can heal from it and you can be fine. Or you could be like Odell Beckham Jr. and be fine coming off your ACL and then tear it in a game because your knees are that much weaker. And don't get me wrong, modern medicine has come a long way and ACLs are not career ending injuries anymore. But I mean, it's still just like a worry in the back of your head, injury prone. You're playing in the NFL. This is not a soft game. So
a lot of contact everywhere.
You've got him. And even with A.J. Brown in that receiving core, you had A.J., Robert Woods. And in my head, I thought Treylon Burks would be a great third receiver. That would be a great trio.
Mm-hmm.
And
he plays a lot like A.J.
Then he plays the Titan way, like everybody said, like tough and blocking receiver, right? Yards after the catch. Not like a super speedy Tyreek Hill receiver, but just another tough guy that would have been a great third addition. Then I thought those three together. But now with the loss of A.J. Brown, who clearly was the number one receiver on this team, that's concerning for Ryan Tannehill. And I know they made, you know, an addition at tight end, Austin Hooper, but he's new and Ryan's still going to need to be able to make some chemistry with him. The fact that he's not in Nashville, well, maybe he is now, but as of recent, hasn't been in Nashville, has been in Florida, hasn't taken this extra time to, you know, meet these guys that you are going to be throwing with after the season you just had. Honestly, I don't know personally what he had going on in Florida. Can't speak on any of that. If there was a reason he needed to be there, but I just think it's a bad look. You're the quarterback on this team. You're the leader. You are an extension of the coaches on the field. Kevin Byard didn't need to be there.
And he was. And Kevin Byard was the only Titans veteran. Or I guess that's like a key contributor that was there.
He's the quarterback of the defense. Simmons.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Kevin Byard really embodies what John Robinson and Mike Vrabel want to instill in this team, you know, culture-wise. And I hate using the culture cliche that has been just like almost – lazily recycled in this industry, but that's something they're trying to establish. That's one thing they want to have in place, and Kevin Byard really embodies that. And here's my thing with Ryan Tannehill, like, not showing up to like OTAs. When you have AJ Brown on your team, it doesn't matter as much because you already have 3 years of chemistry between the two of you. They have been, he has been throwing to AJ Brown for 3 years. AJ Brown has been catching passes for three years from Ryan Tannehill. AJ Brown has bailed this Titans offense out of some stalls in the last 3 years. And AJ Brown has made Ryan Tannehill look like one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL for a couple years. Like, I mean, the two best years of Ryan Tannehill's career, which were here in Nashville, were done with AJ Brown as his number one receiver. They had really good chemistry. They were really good together. And A.J. Brown made Ryan Tannehill a whole lot better. It takes two to tango in the passing game. Actually, it takes a lot more to tango in the passing game because if you don't have an offensive line, your quarterback can't get the ball to anybody unless your name's Joe Burrow. But it was a really good battery between those two. And you're not going to optimize Ryan Tannehill's talents if A.J. Brown's not there because A.J. Brown, like I said, makes him better. Now, the two receivers he's going to lean on the most to fill that void are guys he's never thrown to. He's never thrown to Robert Woods. We don't know how healthy Robert Woods is. Even if Ryan Tannehill was at OTAs, we don't know how much work he'd actually be able to get in with Robert Woods. Now, the work would have to be done off the field or out of the facility because I don't think there's any actual like football being played in these OTAs or just workouts. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, even if they were in the same town, they could maybe meet up. But I don't know how well or how full speed Robert Woods is going to be able to go in those. We don't know the timetable of that knee. And then Treylon Burks, obviously, we know they have never thrown with each other because Treylon Burks has never spoken with Ryan Tannehill. So your two best receivers, you have never thrown a pass to.
Oh, and your tight end.
And your tight end, you've never thrown a pass to. Like, the players you're going to rely to get the ball to in the regular season, you've never thrown a pass to. And if you're a Titans fan, that has to, like, I know people are about trading AJ Brown because he wasn't a part of the team, because he cut off communication with the team. And it displayed somewhat, some would say, I'm using air quotes here for those that aren't watching on the stream, diva-like behavior. I don't necessarily want to call it diva-like behavior. Like, that's business. Like, the football's a business. It's just as much a business as anything. And I think AJ Brown is making a real business decision here. But in getting rid of him might be some addition by subtraction when it comes to quote-unquote culture. But on the field, it's going to be a tough go for maybe for the first 6-7 weeks of the season, I'd think.
Well, and people can say, you know, it's a diva attitude or something like that. And, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, air quotes. Yeah. At the end of the day, AJ did what was best for him. He wanted to get paid, right? Yeah. He wanted to get paid. He got paid. And who knows if he really wanted to stay in Nashville, if he cut off communications. You know, we talked about how him and Debo had the same agent. Debo had requested a trade. But at the end of the day, the Titans organization are the ones who made it happen. Mm-hmm. They traded him because, I mean, there still was a long time to be able to get a contract done. That's, I think, where I don't want to say confused, but puzzling. I almost feel like it was, I don't want to say rash decision, obviously, because, you know, they behind the scenes probably had been, you know, going back and forth. And obviously AJ cut off communication 3 weeks ago, but there was still time to get a contract done. But then I understand the position of John Robinson, like in the back of his head, if we can't get this contract done with AJ, we need another wide receiver. And maybe they would have gone we need to trade up to get Treylon Burks because he fits in our franchise, or we think at least he fits in our franchise from what we can see. But you didn't have to trade him. I guess that's, and yeah, maybe you didn't want to wait till 26 because you went up to 18 to get him. But, and yeah, I don't know. Like, it's hard to wrap your brain around. And also too, I feel like it became so social media oriented and what do these tweets mean? And oh my gosh, he's playing with Jalen Hurts and Ryan Tannehill's not at OTAs. And have they even thrown together this offseason? And we saw the Facebook Live from Debo's mom of him saying, oh, the AJ Brown, they're not going to, they said they won't pay him more than $20 million. And there was just a lot of moving parts that we could see from the outside. And now I feel like it's a he said, she said on what actually went down.
Such an unnecessary melodrama that was kind of building up to this. Like, there, that's the thing, is it didn't necessarily come completely out of left field, because we did build up to this. And
yep,
the entire time on our show and all the other shows on the station, we're talking about AJ Brown's situation in comparison to Deebo Samuel's, because like two other receivers in that class that were non first round receivers, they are approaching their first big contracts. And how is the public behavior going to determine what happens next to those players? Because Deebo Samuel publicly demanded a trade. It was reported publicly that he wanted a trade out of San Francisco. AJ Brown's trade never got, his trade request never made it out of the doors of the Titans facility. So why is it the Titans caved before the San Francisco 49ers with Deebo Samuel? We'll get into that on the other side, as you're listening to Kamel Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's a tale of two receivers. On one hand, the San Francisco 49ers have Deebo Samuel. Deebo Samuel has had three successful seasons with the 49ers, is due for a contract extension. He would like to get paid what he is worth, which on the market could be about $24 million a year. He requests a trade away from San Francisco, and it was publicly announced and publicly reported. Ian Rappaport, Adam Schefter, the whole nine. On the other hand, the Tennessee Titans have A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown helps revitalize the Titans' offense and takes them from a team that was 2-5 in his first year there to a team that went to the AFC Championship game, as well as a team that won three straight division titles because of the revitalization of an anemic passing attack, and help revitalize Ryan Tannehill's career in the process. He is worth a lot more money than he was making. He would also like to get paid. He also requested a trade, but it was not public. It was not publicly reported, and those words never were uttered outside of the Titans facility. One player got traded, one did not. I'm Elijah Campbell. She's Michelle Knezovic. It's Campbell Knezovic on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Deebo Samuel is still a San Francisco 49er, and Kyle Shanahan and the Niners are going to play hardball with him and basically dare him to sit out a year, essentially. Or they have mended the relationship. One of the two. The way Kyle Shanahan talked, it did kind of seem like they're on the same page now. With A.J. Brown, it was reported from Teron, said it on our airwaves last night during our draft coverage, that he wasn't going to touch the field unless he got his extension. And apparently he was asking for more than $25 million per year. And then whenever the Titans did not accept that offer, he shut off communication, didn't talk to them for 3 weeks. Now, does that justify trading him? Some would probably say yes. And I can understand trading him for that. I just don't maybe necessarily like doing it when you're in a Super Bowl window. I understand trading for him and getting what you can get with Treylon Burks. Maybe Treylon Burks can alleviate some of that offensive void. But that's putting a lot of pressure on Treylon Burks to be that good already. And I just don't know if it's going to instantly make this Titans offense good. If the Titans offense does become good this season, I'm afraid it might be a little late.
Yep, Elijah, I mean, you set this segment up pretty perfect. We actually have a text on the text line about this from Nate, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com. Got it, Nate. This time. Nate said, is San Francisco waiting because Deebo is better than AJ? Well, I can give a little insight on that. Charles Robinson, who's a senior NFL reporter for Yahoo Sports, comes on Robbie and Rex Road every week. He's made it clear in his sources, Charles Robinson pretty much has the scoop when it comes to inside these NFL locker rooms and things like that, inside management. But 49ers don't want to give them up. And they are not. I think they're going to hold on with him. Yeah, he's requested a trade, but they're like, nope, we want to keep you, because they know how valuable he is to their team. And I don't know. And that's what, and you can compare them to Tennessee, but if the Titans just went ahead and traded him, I mean, do you think, this is speculation right here, right now, just trying to talk it out. And the truth lies somewhere in between the he said, she said
it does
story. But I mean, if you wanted to keep AJ that bad, you wouldn't have traded him.
Yeah.
And like you said, you would have put your foot down and you would have said, okay, keep sitting out. You're still under contract.
Yeah. Like, what are you going to do? Like waste a year of your prime?
Yeah. Let's remember that Tennessee is the ones who traded him. Mm-hmm. Even though he was, you know, I want this, I want this, I want this. He's still on this team and under contract. They're the ones who pulled the plug on it.
If Aaron Rodgers couldn't, I mean, weasel his way out of his situation this last offseason, there aren't many players in the NFL that are going to be able to weasel themselves out of these contract situations. I mean, this man was due to become one of the highest paid players in the history of the league and was pouting because he didn't like the organization. I don't want to come to training camp. I don't want to play for the Packers. And you know what happened? They didn't do anything. They said, okay, fine, go host Jeopardy or do whatever the hell it is you want to do. Go on a cleanse. Do whatever it is you want to do.
Go and have the Pat McAfee show every week. Go enjoy yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. Do whatever the hell it is you do in your free time. And sure, if you don't want to play, fine. We're not going to trade you so you can play against us and beat us, you know? And that's exactly what the Packers did. They waited. And you know what? Sure enough, right before the season, Aaron Rodgers comes waltzing right in, ready to play week one. It's amazing how, like, sometimes the leverage can really be used by the team. Like, both sides have leverage here too, right? AJ Brown used his leverage to get the hell out of town, and the Packers as a franchise used their leverage to keep one of the best quarterbacks in the history of the game in town, which makes me wonder, Michelle, like what you said earlier, where was the disconnect there between these two? And was the relationship just that severed to where, even though the Titans had some leverage, choose not to use it?
Well, and if the AJ cutting off ties for 3 weeks and not talking to the organization, I mean, if you're Mike Vrabel and your player, and I get it, it's a business. At the end of the day, this is a business. He wanted to get paid. He wanted his money. And listen, he got it. Titans got more draft picks, right? At the end of the day, it is a business. But it just seems like there was something more than if all communication was just cut off for 3 weeks.
That's a long time too. I mean, three weeks leading up to the draft. I think that's kind of what maybe the AJ Brown side wanted here, was they wanted a trade before the draft. And if you're the Titans, if you're going to trade him, yes, I mean, you do it during the draft so you can maybe get a replacement and maybe you catch lightning in a bottle, because sometimes evaluating these wide receivers can be a crapshoot. I mean, I talked about that with Chris Sanders too a couple weeks ago on the Six, about how hard it is to evaluate some of these receivers, because look, I'm sure the Eagles were thrilled to draft Jalen Reagor a couple of years ago. I'm sure they were not thrilled to realize the player that got picked right after their selection was Justin Jefferson, and he's already a top 10 receiver in the NFL. And Jalen Reagor has been so unproductive, the Eagles need to draft a wide receiver next year and then trade for another receiver the year after. And if you're the Vikings, you traded Stephon Diggs and end up falling rear backwards into Justin Jefferson. And asking Treylon Burks to be AJ Brown or Justin Jefferson in year one isn't very fair.
I mean, it's not fair at all. And I almost feel bad for him a little bit, because he gets drafted. And obviously it's such an exciting moment for anyone. It's probably what you've been working for your entire life, right? And there's a video clip actually of him, and it is Tennessee just traded AJ, and it's him and his draft like party or whatever. And there's audio and he's like, yikes. Like, everyone knows, like, that was national news. And I mean, AJ is going to go up to Philly, and bearing no injuries or anything like that, probably going to make Jalen Hurts look a little bit better. Probably going to help him out a little bit.
The Eagles might have been low-key the winner of the entire NFL draft. I mean, like, on a side note, they added AJ Brown to pair with Devontae Smith to give Jalen Hurts every single weapon he could possibly want.
So Jalen Hurts, don't screw it up.
They defensively paired drafted Jordan Davis, who I thought might be one of the best players in this draft. A guy, if you want to talk about just freaks of nature, is like the ultimate freak of nature in this draft, because that's a big man that moves way too fast. And pair him with Fletcher Cox on your interior defensive line. And then, N'Kobe Dean fell in your lap three rounds later because teams were terrified of his shoulder. So this Eagles team stacked up. And if they're like, they could be the favorites to win that division, and they weren't the favorites to win that division 48 hours ago. So, side note, the Eagles absolutely kicked ass in this draft.
Yep, they did. and AJ's heading up there to Philly, and those Philly fans, AJ, no joke.
That is one.
They are intense.
Be careful with
the tweet and deleting.
Oh my God. Because he thinks it was unbearable here with us talking about his tweets. The last place I want to go with someone who tweets cryptically is Philadelphia, the city that boos Santa Claus. I wouldn't necessarily be so excited to have to deal with that city if things go awry. I just told you all the things that went right in the draft. There's going to be high expectations. And if that team starts off 4-4 and the offense is outside like the top 10 in points per game, it is going to get messy on a colossal level.
If AJ Brown doesn't have like over 1,000, like just this insane season, over 1,000, over probably 1,200 yards, you know,
he misses 6 or 7
14
games.
Touchdowns. They're going to be like, what are you like? Yeah. Philly fans are scary.
they can be scary. And at least if you're AJ Brown, the plus side is you can wipe your tears, the $25 million annually that you're given and the 57 guaranteed that you're getting on your contract. And that's going to be something to watch for sure. But like we talked a lot about this AJ Brown trade, because obviously it's the biggest story in this market this week, but there were other picks in the draft last night, including the Titans taking a quarterback in the third round. There's a text on our text line. We'll get to you on the other side too, because it does make a really good point about the importance of that third round pick and when you're going to get anything from that third round pick, if you even do. We'll discuss that on the other side as you're listening to Campbell Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Man, a hectic 48 hours in the city of Nashville. AJ Brown is traded. He's now a Philadelphia Eagle. Treylon Burks will be asked to come in and be an impact player from day one. Receiver out of Arkansas, not a bad receiver. Honestly, has received some AJ Brown comps coming into this draft because of his ability to work with yards after the catch, maybe not a polished route runner that some might like from what I've read, and might be a little bit of a project on that end, and does not have the top end getaway speed that AJ Brown possesses. That's going to be a big hole to fill. But there are other picks last night, Michelle. I'm Elijah Campbell. She's Michelle Knezovic. And a texter to the text line, no name texter, please give your name so we can give you a shout out here on the air, because this is a good text. And Titans fans need to pray that Willis works out, because now we won't be picking a quarterback in next year's draft when really good QBs are supposed to be available. This was not a great quarterback draft. Even if you're not an evaluator, if you're not an NFL scout, the results of the draft should tell you exactly what the NFL thinks of all of these guys. When one quarterback was taken in the first 71 selections, or first 70 selections, and two running backs were taken, the way that position's been devalued in the last decade, mm-hmm. that should tell you everything you know about what these teams and these talent evaluators actually think about this year's quarterback class. They're projects. Some of these guys are projects. Kenny Pickett, I guess, is believed to have the highest floor, but maybe the lowest ceiling of any player that's a quarterback in this draft. And the Titans taking Malik Willis in the third round tells me two things. One, Ryan Tannehill will not be around after next year, because $38 million cap hit this year. It will dip a little bit next year. A lot of it's backloaded, but it's still, he's going to be your most expensive contract. They have an out after this year. I think they might utilize that out. And this draft pick makes me feel more inclined to believe that if it isn't an improved season from what we saw last year, yeah, it's probably going to be an out after this year. And two, it tells me that they believe they see something in Malik Willis that they can fix. And it's not like that he's broken. He had a fantastic career. I mean, accounted for 74 touchdowns in his career at Liberty. I mean, made Liberty a really good college football team, was really good with a horrid offensive line. If you watch any of Liberty's film, that man ran for his life on a lot of plays. He can make plays, and he's a physical specimen. There are some, I guess, mechanics that need to be tweaked based off from what I've seen from talent evaluators and scouts. But you're putting a lot of faith in a guy that some believe can be a project, but with a high ceiling. It's riskier. And I think a lot of better quarterbacks are coming out in next year's draft. That might have been where I've been willing to take a guy at the 26 range if you're there next season. There's no telling where you're going to draft next season. You don't know that right now, but the next year's draft class is a little more loaded and going to be filled with players that are going to be able to play right away. But Michelle, when you think about the Titans drafting Malik Willis in the third round after he slipped and all non-Kenny Pickett quarterbacks slipped in this draft, What did it tell you?
I mean, it tells me that I think all these mock drafts and everything, you just assume at the quarterback position, if you have any chance, you know, at being a starting quarterback in the NFL, you already have to be at a certain level. I think that Kenny Pickett is the most ready now, right? Like, you're telling me the Steelers are going to start Mr. Trubisky? I mean, maybe they will for a couple games. I don't know.
You never know. Yeah.
You never know.
Can go a lot differently than we expect.
Yeah. Maybe they find out, you know, Kenny Pickett isn't ready and we got to develop him a little bit longer. But I was actually just incredibly shocked. I mean, it shows you that the scouts and these teams aren't thinking these guys are it. And especially with next year, right? Bryce Young, a lot of people last night are like, oh, my team's holding out for Bryce Young. Literally, I think every fan that was watching the draft, like, no, we're not going to take a quarterback because we're holding out. It's like, okay, well, not every team can have him. So
you're going to have to really be bad for him. Yeah. It's going to be a tank for Bryce Young and CJ Stroud kind of year.
Yeah. And I think also too, there was so much quarterback movement and before the draft even happened, I think a lot of teams knew in their head, hey, our guy's not in this class. Yeah, you're still going to go watch them at their pro days. You're still going to go see what it's all about, because if you could be missing out on something, then you would kick yourself for it if this guy becomes, you know, another Patrick Mahomes or something like that. But
do your due diligence. Yeah.
Yeah, do your due diligence. Do your homework. But I mean, there was so much quarterback movement and teams were already, you know, figuring out who was going to be their starter, right? And Russell Wilson gets traded and Mitch Trubisky is now with the Steelers. Like, there was so much movement, and Marcus Mariota is now with the Falcons. Teams were setting up who they wanted their quarterback to be before the draft. I mean, I can make an assumption that because they knew this draft wasn't it.
Exactly. I feel like there are a lot of unfinished products in terms of helping you right away. Like, can Kenny Pickett start week one of the season? We'll see. We'll see how training camp goes. He's obviously the most likely to start day one if that's the case. Malik Willis will not be the week one starter unless Ryan Tannehill gets hurt in a preseason game or in training camp or anything like that. So I don't foresee him being a week one starter. I don't see him really starting many games unless it just goes completely haywire during the season and you just want to throw him out there to see what you have moving forward. Then, yeah, maybe. Desmond Ridder might play in Atlanta, but from what I've been told about Ridder is that there's a lot of accuracy issues that need to be fixed. He's battling with Marcus Mariota, which it was ironic that the Falcons took Ridder because Thor Nystrom from NBC Edge, really good NFL draft analyst, came on Darren Donick and Chase and referred to Desmond Ridder as mainland Mariota. So now the Falcons have Mariota and mainland Mariota on the same team. So that'll be an interesting quarterback battle, but you might see Ridder start week one. Who knows? But there isn't the guy that you could, that these teams felt confident is going to take you where you need to be. And if you waste a pick in the first round on a quarterback that you're not confident is going to be the face of your franchise, and you shouldn't be taking a quarterback in the first round. It's a mistake that teams have been making for years in this league. I mean, as long as this league has been around, this has been a thing that teams absolutely reach for. And I don't think teams are going to take the bait this season just because a guy looks really good on tape or looks good physically. And Malik Willis definitely checks the box of looking good physically and still being able to show some flashes. But if there's things that you don't like, that you don't think is going to make him the face of your franchise on week one of this year, what's the point of taking him when you have what you have coming next season?
No, and Elijah, I think you've made a great point there. I will say, though, I like where Tennessee took him. I'm happy that they didn't use right their second round pick or another one of their early picks on him, because they got players that can be in their secondary now, or that are going to, hopefully, fingers crossed, you know, bearing these picks work out, they can be week one ready now players for this team. And then Malik Willis can sit behind Tannehill and develop. And then, like you said, try to get rid of Tannehill's contract, you know, next year. But I mean, I know pretty much everybody's ruling this out just because of how Tannehill performed in the Cincinnati game. What if he actually has a 2019 season and is like borderline Pro Bowl, like he has been in the past? Like, that is, I know, just looking at all the factors, and he doesn't have AJ, and like, but it's still possible, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, and I know people are really down on him. And believe me, if that happens, I will be shocked. But yeah. Still possible. Also, I was just kind of Googling, you know, Malik Willis to Tennessee, blah, blah, all this stuff. And apparently somebody asked in the press conference last night if John Robinson had consulted with Tannehill before drafting him. And he said, no, that's interesting.
It is. Yeah. A lot of instances. There are times where the GM will or the coach will talk to the quarterback about, say, hey, we're taking this guy, or if he's there at 84 or whatever it is, we're going to take him. And we just want you to give you a heads up. They didn't give him the heads up. I know that's something a lot of teams do. Not every team does it, obviously, because the Titans didn't do it last night. But I think there is definitely some tension, it feels like, between the entire offense right now. Anyone not named Derrick Henry, almost. Like, there was that riff
Elijah Brown in the team. I completely agree. Like, when they had their pre-draft press conference, I know that some people said Vrabel just was fine, and some of those reporters covering this team for a long time know him a lot better than I do. And this is only me covering it in 1 year. But when Joe Rexroad asked about Ryan Tannehill not being at OTAs, I thought he was mad. I don't know if he was just mad because he didn't want to deal with that question or something, but he basically, his response was, I want everybody here. I'm a coach and I want everybody here at all times. Like, Any NFL coach is going to want that, right? And then he said, I do understand if people have other, you know, responsibilities and things like that, but it's also your job, right? If you were a quarterback of an NFL team, you're also a leader. You're an extension of your coach on the field. And, you know, to not have him there, to not have AJ there, Charles Robinson, who I know a lot, always has great information. He comes on every Tuesday with us on Robbie and Rex Road. He's a senior NFL insider for Yahoo Sports. I mean, when he said that, kind of created some buzz around our station. He said, if a quarterback doesn't show up to OTAs, I think it's one of two things. Either you got a riff with your head coach, or you want to revamp your contract, get paid more. He said, it's either, just an issue, or you want some money. So I thought that was pretty interesting. And I didn't think that either were true, but it kind of surprises me that he's still not there. And then also the reports coming out that he hasn't sent Treylon Burks a text. And I know these are small, minor things, but you think about just being a leader in an NFL locker room and how football is such a team sport and you need everybody to be on the same page. And when your offense just lost a huge domino, you do not want them all falling.
Yeah. And there might be a lot of small things, but small things, if they come in bunches, can add up to maybe one big thing. And it is interesting to see how that's going to go. But last week at this time, Josh Ibrahim from ProFitX came on our airwaves and did mention if he was AJ Brown's agent, he would ask for north of $25 million. It was reported last night that by our own Teron Davenport, that AJ Brown and his agent were asking for north of $25 million and like $80 million guaranteed, which would put him in the category of Devontae Adams and Tyreek Hill. Josh Ibrahim said the exact same thing last week on our airways. If he was going to be the agent for AJ Brown, we're going to have Josh back on to discuss. If he can take a little bit of a victory lap, he'll take a victory lap here and we can continue a discussion that we had last week, as maybe get into the Grizzlies, who he is an NBA guy, former NBA agent after all. The Grizzlies did get to the second round last night. How is the team building and contract negotiation exercise going to help them advance their season moving forward? And where did the AJ Brown talks fall apart from an agent standpoint? We'll talk with that with Josh and more. But first, Michelle is going to tell us a little bit about our friends over at Seltzerland.
Elijah, today, Seltzerland is turning Nashville into hard seltzer paradise. This Saturday, April 30th at Riverside Golf Links, starting at 11 a.m., everybody. You can enjoy this one-of-a-kind immersive experience as you spend the day tasting over 100 unique hard seltzers, indulge in mouth-watering munchies, tons of seltzer swag. I'm excited to bust out the Instagram for the most Insta-worthy moments. Seltzerland has rounded up the best hard seltzers brands in the land for one epic day dedicated to the bubbly brew that I know I love and everybody can't get enough of. You do not want to miss out on Seltzerland 2022. So join me, Michelle Knezovic, and Caroline Fenton of Stillman & Company this afternoon at the Riverside Golf Links. You are not going to want to miss this. Make sure to listen to 102.5 The Game for this last day. And maybe you could win some tickets to Seltzerland this Saturday at 11 a.m.
Kamlin Knezovic rolls along here on the Saturday morning, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm Elijah Campbell. She's Michelle Knezovic. Crazy 48 hours in Nashville professional sports, and some of that involves A.J. Brown and the contract that he's now getting that's going to be worth $25 million a year. And this man on our show last week did say that if he is A.J. Brown's agent, that's what he's asking for. This is Josh Ibrahim from ProFitX, and Josh came on here. We asked him the question. He's a former agent. He said, Josh, if you're A.J. Brown's agent, what are you walking into that negotiation room asking for? And we thought it might have been a little high at the time, but no, that is exactly what was being asked. And it was reported that it was being asked that A.J. Brown was going to want more than $25 million, which put him in that Tyreek Hill and Devontae Adams category. So, Josh, thanks again for joining us. And we'll go ahead and let you take a little victory lap here, as you did call last week on the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, I was honestly just as shocked as you guys were, you know, when I saw the deal. Number one, because I'm a Cowboys fan, so I'm going to have to deal with it, you know, multiple times next year. but really, you know, the deal I thought from an agent perspective, you know, was on the, you know, the ambitious side, but I, you know, just given the market and the importance of the receiver position, you know, the amount of money, the overall contract structure didn't surprise me. The guaranteed money, I thought, you know, was right on par with where the deal stands. And look, he's a, you know, after reviewing some more Kink film, he's a dynamic deep threat. He can play in the slot. His yards after the catch are a problem, and he makes unbelievable grabs. You know, if Hurts can put it in his, in, you know, on the back door, he's gonna make a lot of unbelievable catches. So, yeah, it, you know, I don't want to take a victory lap because that's all on, you know, A.J. Brown's team for getting that deal done. But I texted Michelle. I was like, what happened?
I think might have lost him, might have cut out on us victory lap. Yeah.
I texted Michelle on the night the trade happened, and I was like, what happened? You know, were the Titans listening? Did we scare someone? But overall, you know, very happy for A.J. Brown, well deserved, and I think both sides came out of it, you know, with a pretty good you know, situation coming out of that trade.
Well, yeah, it's funny, Josh. He had sent me that text, like, looks like I was or were they listening or something like that? I texted Elijah, Josh too, and I said, well, looks like Josh hit the nail on the head with that one. So Josh, there's been a lot of, you know, he said, she said, coming out of this whole A.J. Brown situation. And apparently A.J. had cut off communication with the Titans organization for 3 weeks. You know, hearing that as an agent, what does that make you, like, what do you think in a room? Like, why would somebody do that? Have you seen people do that, you know, just because they can't get to a number that they want? Or have you ever had that happen as an agent or no? You know, of other agents just surrounding that situation?
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, I think there was a breakdown in communications. It very well could have been, you know, the number, you know, they weren't on the same page with the number side of it or the guaranteed side of it. It could be a variable of reasons. Typically, that doesn't, I mean, you know, in an extension, in a contract extension, you want to be progressing towards the end goal, which is reaching an extension. So that's a little surprising to me, but I think either either one side was very firm on where their position was, and you know, the communications broke down. So I would say that would be a little alarming to me, but you know, I think I've seen crazier things happen in the agent business with last minute deals getting struck as well.
Based off your experiences too, you talked about these last minute deals. I mean, like Josh, this happened in the span of 48 hours, reportedly. It went from looking for a trade partner, Eagles call on Wednesday night, and on Thursday morning, the talks are hot and heavy. Like, based on your experiences as a player agent, exactly how has that, how fast can these things happen too? Because there's other receivers in this situation too. I think AJ Brown's the first of many dominoes that might fall because Deebo Samuel requested a trade, and with this wide receiver market, like, we're going to be more receivers requesting these trades. And sometimes it's not always going to be a slow burn with Hansel and Gretel breadcrumbs to lead us to where these trades are going to happen. Sometimes, like this one, it just happens in the span of 15, 16 hours.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, sports is a business, and it comes from both sides, right? You know, the player has a window where he can maximize his financial earnings, and they have every right to do that if they've proven themselves in the league. That's my firm opinion on that. So, but also from the team situation, it's got to be from a roster construction standpoint. It's got to make sense to, you know, sustain the level of play these teams want to compete at. So, you know, everything kind of revolves around, you know, from a team perspective, you know, it revolves around winning, and winning translates to a lot of things in business, in the business of sports. So, I think I definitely have had some, you know, last minute deals that just kind of popped up, but I think it's a matter of, you know, collecting data and making sure that your clients are informed and ready to make decisions when those opportunities and you know, with the team, it's about improving the team and seeing an opportunity to do that. And with the draft, I think it kind of culminated with everything aligned so that both sides could get what they want. And so I think they did a good job of executing that in such a short span. And it's a little surprising, but not so much.
AJ got paid and that's what he wanted. So like you said, very happy for him. The wide receiver market right now is through the roof, and he had to take, you know, advantage of that. So hats off to him. He got his contract. But listen, we know we couldn't have you on again without talking some NBA, Josh. We got the Memphis Grizzlies. They are on to the next round. And a guy who's looking to get paid soon, Memphis Grizzlies, they have a young team, but Ja Morant. I know you texted me after last time. You're like, we got to talk Grizz. How much do you think this young superstar is about to sign a contract for in the near future? I mean, Memphis has made it very clear that they will pay him whatever he wants.
Yeah. I mean, and it's funny because when I was an agent, I was recruiting Ja. I went down to Murray State.
Oh my gosh.
And met his father, T. And it was a great experience getting to know them and kind of watching his trajectory just kind of skyrocket. Even during his, you know, his second year at Murray State, he was kind of an unknown at the beginning of the season, and then he just kind of went off. But you know, from Ja's analysis on our platform, you know, we have him projected, you know, at a max level. With, you know, he's eligible. He's going to be eligible for a rookie extension coming up, and you know, it's a no-brainer in my opinion. He's a franchise cornerstone. You know, I watched the game last night, and you know, he didn't have a strong game, but he still made an impact in that game. And his athleticism, his IQ and vision for the game, he's just going to get better and better. And I think the platform kind of reflects that. You know, we have him projected at a two-year fair market value between 36 and 47 million, which is configured with the rising salary cap for the next 2 years. So, yeah, I think it's on par. I think he's definitely worthy of a rookie max, and that's a no-brainer from my perspective.
Talking with Josh Ibrahim, ProFitX, a new software that's able to kind of bridge the gap between teams and front offices. And Josh, I think one thing that could be put to test, and one thing that, you know, your product would be really good to test here with this Grizzlies team, is the value of Jaren Jackson Jr. Now, he's a top five pick in his draft class. Honestly, the Grizzlies don't make this ascension without him, but at the same time, too, there might be some injury concerns that have kept him out long term at times. And there are some times too where he might not be, I guess, a perennial all-star player, but a key piece to this team, especially when he's not battling foul trouble, but still a key piece to this team. And his contract does end after this year. He'll be due for an extension. What do we think that's going to look like moving forward? And how hard is it going to be to keep Jaren Jackson Jr. at a team-friendly deal?
Yeah, so Jaren Jackson, you know, obviously has battled some injuries, but I think he's kind of shown his effectiveness when he's out on the floor. We have him at a real-time value of $26 million this season. He actually did sign an extension last season. I believe it was let me just double-check. But his extension kicks in next year at $28.9 million. So at the time of his extension, we had him projected, I believe, we have it in one of our case studies. I believe it was between $21 and $23 million at the time of the contract extension. So right on par with where we thought and kind of the ballpark of what he was going to sign. You know, I think at this point it's just about a matter, you know, he's still, you know, pretty young and has time to develop. But I think in this system, with the way that the team plays, he's going to be relied on heavily. And I think it's a great contract for the Grizzlies. It's a great contract for Jaren. And I think it's going to work out very well as long as he stays healthy and continues to develop the way that you know we project him to.
Well, the Grizzlies are now going to face the Warriors, and then your Mavericks, Josh, are going to face the Sun in the West. So I know you have a little bias just because you work with the Mavericks and everything like that, but who do you have winning this whole thing? East, West, who is coming out? Lastly, really quick, I got to pick the basketball brain of yours. Who is winning this NBA?
Well, that's a tough question. I mean, you know, I think one thing we really need to consider is the injury throughout the rest of the playoff, because I think they can shift the dynamic. I think it can shift the dynamic, especially with the Embiid injury. You know, in game
yeah,
six, they looked very, very dangerous. And then seeing the Embiid injury, that indefinitely, I'm not sure what the timeline on that is, but you know, from the East is super competitive with the semifinal matchups. The West is super competitive. I mean, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a lot of great basketball. I'm really excited, but you know, if I had to pick one team just based off everything that I'm seeing in the playoffs right now, it would be really hard. I mean, Boston looks really tough out of the East, and I think it's a crapshoot in the West. I think any of those teams can come out. honestly, But I think the way Boston's playing with the emergence of Jason Tatum, he's just getting better every game. And the return of Robert Williams, you know, brings back that defensive element to the Celtics. So I like the Celtics coming out of the East. It's going to be tough with the Bucks, but with Middleton out, I think it just changes the dynamic, and it's going to be a tough matchup for them. But out of the West, I'm going to go with my Mavericks. I think, you know.
You have to.
I have to. I mean, Luka just, you know, the beauty of the playoffs is you get to see how deep all of these rosters are, and you're starting to see a lot of different X factors, which we get to highlight on our platform, which is really cool, and boost their playoff values and things like that. So, but yeah, I'm going to go with the Mavericks. Luka's back and looking comfortable. Everyone's firing, and they just look like they're on a power play every time. They're on the offensive end. So as long as their defense holds up and they continue to play, they would have been playing the entire season, I think they can pull it off and come out of the West.
Yeah. I mean, Jalen Brunson, also another player that made himself look like he's going to get a fat contract here very soon. And in the process of doing that, maybe broke the Utah Jazz permanently. So we'll see how that transpires moving forward. But Josh, we always appreciate you having you on and sharing your insight from the interesting angle that you have in professional sports. We appreciate the value you bring, and excited to have you on again sometime down the road.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate your time.
Thanks, Josh.
Josh Ibrahim, Pro Fit X. And as you heard, also doesn't work with the Dallas Mavericks. His Mavs definitely have a chance to upend the Phoenix Suns, especially if Devin Booker is not 100% healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting stuff going on in the NBA. We'll get back to the Titans on the other side. The Titans did make a second round pick that I'm not exactly thrilled about and doesn't make a ton of sense to me. We'll discuss that on the other side. It's Justin Campbell and Knezovic here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. A lot of talk about the A.J. Brown trade, which we'll get into because we are taking your texts and calls at 615-737-1025, and a lot of talk about Malik Willis being a Tennessee Titan. But there's one draft pick last night, Michelle, that I don't quite understand. It's courtside. Wow, that's a Freudian slip if I've ever heard one. It's Campbell and Knezovic right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. During basketball seasons, we masquerade as courtside with Campbell and Knezovic.
There's a first time
because
for
we
everything.
Are ballers.
There
yes,
is. That's right. Jared Cassidy behind the glass, and Jared doing an excellent job of keeping us on air and making sure we don't take this thing off the rails. But second round pick last night, the Titans took Roger McCreary, 35th overall, cornerback from Auburn, which by all means, a really good player. I mean, I liked what I saw from what ESPN showed last night. A productive player in college is defense coordinator Derek Mason, not to be confused with R.D. Mace, had raving reviews about him. And Teron, I trust Teron's eye, especially when it comes to corners. And Teron says it's a really good pick. But what I don't understand is, what does that tell you about what the Titans think about Caleb Farley? Drafted a corner last year, a guy who slipped because he had back problems and back surgeries. And usually it's not one of those things that get a lot better. And then 6-7 weeks into the season, he tears an ACL, out for the year. You get essentially nothing from Caleb Farley.
Mm-hmm.
Does the Titans taking McCreary in the second round mean that we probably won't get out of Caleb Farley what we thought we were going to get whenever they drafted him out of Virginia Tech in the first round last season?
I mean, it's got to say something, right? I'm surprised, though, because at the pre-draft press conference, a reporter asked John Robinson about Caleb Farley, and Mike Vrabel basically took the mic, which he never does, and praised him that he looks better than ever. He was doing great on their little quizzes and beat somebody. He's like, I'm not going to tell you who he beat in the quiz, but he did great. And then they go ahead and draft a corner. But I also, too, to that point, is think about how this NFL game is changing. People are having three dynamic receivers on the field at a time. And, you know, to counter that, you need a secondary that's also going to be able to cover those guys. I think we talked about it too. All of the cornerbacks going in the second round, I was surprised.
Yeah, there was a run on them in the second round.
And I think it says a little bit about Caleb Farley, but it also could be, you know, maybe an insurance policy of we need to solidify another guy out there to be able to compete. But if you don't get another year out of Caleb Farley, I mean, that's just, everybody already says it was a waste the first year. If you don't get another year out of him, that's just going to be a really bad look on the draft pick. I mean, it already doesn't have the best look on it, but I mean, that's what I said to you off the air. Does this mean that they're, I don't want to say done with him because they're not,
but maybe they're not as confident that he can be the lockdown corner because like they're still, I guess it was a deep corner draft too, because you saw the run that was made on him and maybe they foresaw the run. They didn't foresee the AJ Brown trade happening allegedly before it happened, but they did foresee a run on corners in the second round and they got their guy before anybody else could take their guy. And my thing is if this happened in like the third or fourth round, okay, there's your insurance, but a second rounder that you had to trade up to get. You had to get that second round pick because obviously the Titans second round pick this year was given to the Falcons because of the Julio Jones trade. Using that to get a corner, as valuable as all these picks are in this year's draft, is almost a little concerning because I don't want to waste that on a guy who is like your number three corner. I mean, sure, it adds depth. But I don't think corner really is the issue. A lot of guys stepped up even when they didn't have to. I know you lost Crookshank, but I mean, I think there's other ways to kind of replenish that loss. And I think there were other ways to maybe get a corner. They must really love McCreary, and apparently they do. I mean, they're very high on him, and he could be really good. He can come out next year and be the best corner on the team, and that would be great. And I'll probably change my tune, you know, after that happens. But personally would have kind of liked to see like maybe in addition to the receiver crew, because like the offense, if the offense isn't going to be any good, or if the offense is going to be even below average or slightly below average, the defense can be otherworldly and you still go 9-8. Like that's how the NFL is right now. And I would have loved to at least seen some insurance to get as much out of the AJ Brown departure as you can. And George Pickens was still available. Sky Moore was still available.
Wandale Robinson,
Alec Pierce, who I really like, sneaky athletic lunch pail guy. Real gym rat. The Colts took him, out of Cincinnati, solid receiver. But I would have loved that. If I'm a Titans fan, I think that's what I would have won, because AJ Brown's gonna be a big loss and that maybe ask less of Treylon Burks to have to do, but if it provides some insurance at corner, that isn't a bad way to, I guess, stack the defense when you look at how much better the AFC got in terms of the arms race that's happened this offseason.
Well, Elijah, when we were making our predictions of where will John Robinson and Mike Vrabel go with this second round pick, in the back of my head, I just thought, you know, they really should take another receiver. I thought the Wandale Robinson, you know, this was a deep receiver class, and they were third in the second round, right? They could Bayless have gotten Jones. One.
Yeah.
And when they picked a corner, I remember thinking, who is that? Or I was just very shocked, right? You rank your projections of what position they may go just based on needs and all that and all of that. But I definitely was surprised with this one. And I mean, so is Nick Westbrook Akina going to be their third wide receiver? They've got to get somebody else at this position, don't they?
If that's the thing, like it's a double-edged sword, because on one hand, every other team in your conference has loaded up with weapons and you have to have like defensive backs to be able to stop them. Like I totally understand like wanting to do that. But at the same time, like if your offense can't generate those points too, sometimes great offense beats great defense. And if you're playing against a team like the Broncos and you have Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, Tim Patrick, and some like really good receivers on the field, and they just break off their corner, no matter how good your corner is, sometimes these receivers can just make plays, and that could be the difference in a game, and that can be a difference between one or two games, which can be the difference to winning and losing the division, especially since the Colts have done a really good job of loading up on weapons too. I mean, let's not underestimate the night they had last night, getting Alec Pierce, a solid receiver, and then getting Jelani Woods, the 6'7" freak of nature tight end from Virginia, a player Teron was very high on that a lot of teams or a lot of analysts had him going maybe fifth, sixth round. They took him in the third last night, and he is going to be a big boy target for Matt Ryan. The Colts got better over the draft, especially on offense. And like, you're going to have to keep up with that in your own division. You have to play them twice a year. Like, every team in the conference got better in terms of the depth of weapons they have. I don't think the Titans got better in depth, and they certainly didn't get better on the top end of it.
No, I mean, I completely agree. As soon as the AJ Brown trade happened, if you looked at betting odds of who's going to win the AFC South next year, Tennessee dropped. I think the Colts are the favorite. And then after this draft, Colts are going to be the favorite. They definitely got better. I mean, first off, they don't have Carson Wentz, and they actually got some picks for him, which is, you know, good for the Colts. And they beefed up that wide receiver core. They only really had Pittman Jr., right? They beefed it up on that end. Matt Ryan's going to have some weapons, but a little breaking news on Twitter. Ryan Tannehill has officially tweeted and welcomed Treylon Burks to Tennessee.
We can finally stop talking about how Ryan Tannehill did not acknowledge the existence of his newest wide receiver because he did it on Twitter, which means it counts and it's actually a thing now.
And everybody saw it, so they can't even talk about it anymore.
We can't talk about it anymore. Treylon Burks can't say he hasn't heard from Ryan Tannehill because Tannehill publicly proclaimed his excitement to have Treylon Burks as his potential number one wide receiver here in Nashville. We'll talk about that and more on the other side as you're listening to Kamel Knezovic here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Kamel Knezovic rolling right along here, ESPN 102.5 The Game. I'm Elijah Campbell. She's Michelle Knezovic. Jared Cassidy behind the glass, rolling the tune, some Foo Fighters today. Very good. Great song. But we promise to get to your text and your calls. Text 615-737-1025. Here's text from Jeff. Jeff said, maybe you guys forgot the Titans are a running, in all caps, based offense. How many receivers do you think they need? 6, 7, 8? Well, Jeff, take that first number that you mentioned and just divide it by 2. And if we can get 3 quality ones, yes, that's great. Nick Westbrook-Ikhina as your 3 might be all right, but like, you're comparing it to other teams in the league, I don't know.
He's got the most chemistry with Ryan Tannehill right now.
He does. I guess there is something to be said for that. But here's the thing, Jeff. With the Titans, I know they're a running-based offense, but you don't know how much more Derrick Henry has left in the tank. I don't think you can survive giving him 30 carries a game over the course of a 17-game regular season and relying on that to get all of your offense. Like, does Derrick Henry still have a lot in him? Probably. I mean, if you watch his workout videos, it looks like he hasn't skipped a beat. But the guy who played a playoff game this year with screws in his foot because he had a Jones fracture, which a lot of that is caused by the amount of torque his feet go into the ground. Derrick Henry is a big man, a large, large man. And when he goes and he plants that foot in the ground, all that force has to go somewhere, and it goes to that man's feet. And that is, it's been explained, like, that's kind of how that injury happens. Like, he's not going to run like this forever. And with the workload he's had the last 2 or 3 years, even though he has defined science and defined past precedent, with this kind of workload, I mean, this workload broke Larry Johnson. This workload broke Jamal Lewis. This workload broke a lot of players, and it hasn't broken Derrick Henry yet, but it will one day. You just don't know if that's going to happen. Like, you can't just keep carrying the ball 300 plus times a season because you will have what happened last year. You cannot be a run-based offense if Derrick Henry is not your running back. And if he gets hurt or isn't 100% and you don't have the best weapon to make teams not have to load up the box, you're going to struggle. And that's what happened last year. Ryan Tannehill didn't make these teams pay, especially at the end of the year. They lost the Steelers game because, A, they turned the ball over a ton, and, B, they didn't necessarily make them pay because even when Derrick Henry was running the ball and the Titans were able to run the ball well, they stacked it, and then you have to beat the teams over the top. If they stack the box, even though Derrick Henry is good against stacked boxes, it's going to be hard to outscore teams because you can play great defense in the NFL and still give up 21 points in a game. To be able to score with some of these teams, wide receiver depth is crucial. Now, while I agree the Titans are still a run-based offense, mm-hmm. you're going to have to be really competent passing the ball to win these games. And if the Titans don't run the ball as well as they have the last couple of years, and say, heaven forbid, anything happened to Derrick Henry again, or he might not be as productive because teams are going to load the box again, mm-hmm. then if you don't have that depth, you're going to be easy to game plan against, and you are going to limit how good your offense can be. That's why getting extra receivers is important. I'm not asking for Odell Beckham Jr. to be your number three receiver. I'm not asking for you to go out and trade for Jerry Jeudy to be your number three receiver. That's unrealistic, but you mm-hmm. need at least a good, an extra slot receiver. You need wide receiver depth for guys that are going to make defenses pay. I'm not completely sold that Nick Westbrook-Ikhina and Des Fitzpatrick, based off what we saw the last 2 years, are going to be guys to be able to do that next season.
Well, and let's remember, we wouldn't be talking about this if A.J. Brown was still on the team. A.J. Brown was a guy who, yeah, they might, the other team might know that Ryan Tannehill's throwing it to him, but it didn't matter. Yep. Right? He was a
proven commodity.
First off, yes. Second off, an elite player. And I think A.J. Brown's ceiling is just up from here, barring any career-ending injury, or just basically if he can stay healthy. But you need just another guy. Like you said, you don't need a superstar, but you need another guy that Ryan Tannehill can count on and can just be solid short passes. Because all of this just like, I mean, who knows? Treylon Burks, still a question mark, because we just don't know how he is going to transition into the mm-hmm. NFL. We don't know how him and Ryan are going to be able to mesh. Hopefully with training camp, they'll be able to get a lot of reps under their belts and they'll feel good about it. But it's still not the 4 years that A.J. Brown has had with Ryan Tannehill. That being said, Robert Woods coming off the ACL injury, we can't not say that. Yes, he is a solid receiver and he was on the Rams, but he also is still coming off an ACL injury, which is very, very important to note, because we just don't know how, we don't know how explosive he's going to be in this offense. On the Derrick Henry note, we saw him going towards another 2,000 yard season. If he didn't get hurt, he probably would have hit that 2,000. This is why running backs cannot go back. Like, there's always something why a running back can't go back to back 2,000 yard seasons. And this is why everybody's like, you don't mm-hmm. pay a running back, but Derrick Henry is a freak of nature. But if you want him to be a freak of nature for a couple more years, you gotta be careful. And everybody's always like, how's the workload? How's the workload? And I think that, you know, they do a good job of managing it, but we also have to remember, yeah, he's working out and all this stuff, but he still had that intense foot surgery, which is very, very, you know, mm-hmm. your feet are pretty important if you're a running back, but you know, you don't want to work him into the ground. I mean, we even yep. saw last year, he would have certain days off before he even got injured. I think the Titans organization did a great job of, you know, leveling that out. But we saw also in the Bengals game, he only, I forget which foot it was his left or right foot, and whatever foot it was, he would go the other way so he could explode off his good foot. Mm-hmm. And the Bengals caught on to that.
They did. And he was ineffective. He was ineffective the entire game. And here's the thing too, like the Titans still end up running the ball well. And because Deontay Foreman was able to put up almost 100 yards on just like 4 or 5 carries, or he put up over 100 yards, I think, on like 4 or 5 carries. I can't remember the stat line right now. Been many moons. And a lot of Titans discourse since then. But the Titans are a solid run blocking team. That's going to help no matter what run game they do. They're going to be reliable on the run, but you just have to be able to make people pay for when teams load the box. And mm-hmm. you can't go into each game with the other team's defensive coordinator being like, all right, here's the game plan. We're going to load the box. And if they know they can stop your run game, make Ryan Tannehill beat you. How many teams in the NFL are shivering? Yeah, or not in the NFL. How many teams in the AFC are shivering by saying, hey, Ryan Tannehill is going to have to beat you given the other quarterbacks that are in this league? That puts a lot of pressure on him to have to be able to do that. And I understand what Jeff's saying, because obviously the Titans offense is at its best when Derrick Henry is running for a gazillion yards in a game. And when it makes life on the outside a lot better. Like if Derrick Henry is able to do that, yeah, it's going to be easier for Ryan Tannehill and Treylon Burks to be able to create a good connection, or him and Bobby Trees to create a good connection, because they're seeing different coverages that are going to be changed because of the way the Titans are running the ball. Mm-hmm. However, you can't rely on that every single game too. Mm-hmm. You just can't go wrong having more weapons. You really can't. And having more weapons in the passing game and having more options helps you a ton. The two teams that were in the Super Bowl this year had deep receiving cores. Van Jefferson was the third or fourth receiver, fourth option on this Rams team. And he is a really – he would come in today and be the number two receiver on this Titans team.
It's versatility. That's what you need because I think one of – was it Eli Apple from the Bengals or one of their cornerbacks said, oh, I saw Ryan Tannehill looking straight at Julio Jones.
I think it's Jesse Bates. Yeah, Jesse Bates just like – I think it was that first play or whatever, that first first play of the game. Stared down the eyes. Like, I mean, that there was two reads on that play.
Ryan Tannehill has more options, right, it gives a little bit of versatility and maybe that doesn't happen, right, when he's staring down Julio Jones and he knows he's throwing it to him. But we have another text really quick on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. This is an interesting question. If you could get a fourth and a fifth this year and a second next year for Ryan Tannehill to the Seahawks, would you do it? Elijah, I'll let you go first.
I want to say no, because I think as much as we like to bag on Ryan Tannehill lately, and in this market, bagging on Ryan Tannehill has been the popular thing for whether it's throwing three interceptions against the Bengals or for not showing up to OTAs or waiting till Saturday to tweet about your receiver or talk to him, whatever. But I think he does give you the best chance to win right now on this roster. Like, your defense has a chance. Your defense is still in that super window. The team, yes. I mean, if you didn't trade AJ Brown, I still think you're in the window. You're still the same, almost the same 12-win team you were last year. And you were one bad mistake-free game away from winning the game against the Bengals and playing an AFC championship game in Nashville. I don't want to use this year as Malik Willis's developmental year because you still have so much you can play for. If the defense wasn't very good, you couldn't sign Jeffrey Simmons or Kevin Byard has a bad year or the defense regresses to the mean and they're like the 15th team. Like, you lose pieces on that defense. If that were the case, then maybe. If you don't think you have the team to absolutely go for it this year, then unloading that contract wouldn't be a bad deal. But I still think you can win this year. I think it's worth trying to win and getting every bit out of Tannehill this year because he still gives you the best chance to win on this roster.
I completely agree with that. And Malik Willis is still young. There's still a lot of things that need to be worked on and developed for him to be able to be a quarterback in the NFL. I wouldn't do it. I think if you were to do that, you'd be almost in a full rebuild mode.
I think so. At that point, you are waving the white flag on your season.
You're waving it and you're saying, you know what? We're developing this young talent. We're in a rebuild mode. But before we go to break, there is a great text on the text line about what maybe could potentially we could see in the future from John Robinson to, you know, up the ante on this squad. And of course, we got to cover the Preds and what the heck is happening as they head into the playoffs, Elijah.
Yes, we will definitely address the text on the other side. Our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Join the conversation, 615-737-1025. We'll end the show on your text. Titans, Preds, next. This is Campbell Knezovic on ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Final segment, Campbell Knezovic, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Getting your text here on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll go ahead and address Phil in Kentucky. Wanted us to talk about Preds. Any chance you guys talk Preds today? And we can go ahead and address that right now because, man, out of all the weirdness in Nashville, I think last night's Preds game against the Coyotes in Arizona might have been the cherry on top of this weird milkshake that has been brewing in this town. And the Predators take a 4-0 lead in the first 7 minutes of the game. Coyotes pull their goalie. I mean, because he gives up 4 goals on 5 shots, I think it was. I think he might have collected a save. Vemelka, his name gives me such a hard time. Karel Vemelka having a horrific night. The Preds just peppering him with goals and shots in the first period. And then the Coyotes score 5 straight goals throughout the course of the next 2.5 periods. It was probably the worst way you could end the season. You were playing the worst team in the NHL, a team that Craig Morgan on Behind Enemy Lines, a segment we do for pregame where I talk with someone, whether they're a broadcaster, a beat writer, someone who's with these teams every day, you know, to kind of get the skinny and all the Preds opponents. And yesterday I'm recording that segment, and Craig says in the segment, "This is the worst Coyotes team I have ever covered." And he's been there since the dawn of the organization. And this team was the worst in the NHL by a mile. And they score 5 unanswered goals to win that game and for you to blow a 4-0 lead. It wasn't very pretty last night. Michelle, the Preds now have to go play the Avalanche in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I'm not enthusiastic right now. I mean, there's always a chance because it's the most unpredictable playoff format. We watched the Canadiens, a team that was under 500, reel past some of the best teams in the sport last year to make it to a Stanley Cup final. Anything can happen. However, it doesn't feel great going into the first round, which starts on Tuesday night.
You know what this game gives me vibes of? I mean, I know that the Preds have already clinched their playoff spot, but it gives me Indianapolis Colts versus the Jags this year in their last game of the season, playing one of the worst teams. Think about it. If the Preds hadn't clinched their playoff spot and they needed this win to do it, that would have been, I mean, very, very
calm. We'll never hear the end of that. We'll never stop talking about that. Like, that would be just the worst way to – that, because that defines your season. Ultimately.
Exactly. And you want to end on a good note as you head into the playoffs. They're not coming back to Nashville. They're flying straight from Arizona now to Colorado to play them. And obviously they did beat Colorado in a shootout the other night. The best team in one of the best teams in the NHL right now.
Three.
I mean, Tampa's up there too, but I mean, big save, Dave. Like, who do you want in goal? As an update for, you know, UC Saros, he has a high ankle sprain, which that's not good.
Possibly 4 to 6 weeks, maybe, is like what I've heard people that are familiar with that kind of injury. And if it's 4 to 6 weeks, he's not just missing one playoff series. If you were to somehow get past Colorado, he's missing a lot more time.
Well, and then you ask the question to yourself, who's going to be in net, right? So UC has been your guy all year. Played more games than John Hines expected. He's made that very clear that, you know, this workload for him is more than we expected going into the season, right? So you've got Big Save Dave or you've got Ingram. I mean, Phil texted in again. Who do you blame this loss on? Do you blame it on Ingram? Do you think Big Save Dave would have been able to? I mean, Big Save Dave held his own in the game against the Avalanche.
Wasn't a good start. The Avalanche kind of started similar to what the Preds did. I had a feeling. I was like, the way the morale is right now, and Riddick has struggled a lot this year. I was like, I have a feeling the Avalanche just put up 6 on the Preds on Thursday night. I had that feeling going into it. And when the Avalanche scored 3 goals in like the first 10 minutes of the game, it's like, well, they might put up more than 6. They might put up 12. But
and then David Riddick gets taken out by the crossbar. If you haven't seen that video, go look it up because it's absolutely amazing.
Oh man, it is funny. That'll be an all-time SportsCenter not top 10 play, and is also the perfect embodiment of what the Preds last
are going
5
through.
Or 6 games, have been what they're going through right now. Like, oh, last night was brutal. They're going to want to forget that one ASAP. You're going to want to have Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones from Men in Black bust through the doors with the suits on and the little memory zapper and do that to the entire team, because that's one that if you still carry the ghosts from that game into a series of the Colorado Avalanche, not only will they get swept, it will be ugly in every single game. You got to help the goalies out a little bit. You can't give away breakaway shots. I know Ingram didn't play his best last night. Shane Gostisbehere had a couple goals where he just lets one rip from the point, and they found their way into the back of the net. You got to track the puck better. I know those aren't easy saves to make, but if you're going to play in the playoffs against teams like Colorado, who has goal scorers all over the ice, and their defenseman, Cale Makar, also an elite goal scorer for a defenseman, you're going to see those same kind of shots. And if you can't track the puck in those situations.
Makar versus Yossi for the Norris. That's going to be this series again.
It is.
I mean, call me crazy, but what we've seen from this Preds team this year, I feel like they play to their competition. if that makes sense.
It has happened. They have definitely underperformed against bad teams and then meet the level of expectation against some of the better teams in the league. They've done that at times this year.
They haven't lost to the Avalanche this year.
Yeah.
And they're about to go play a series with them. And don't get me wrong, I know their starting goalie is out for the Predators, and this is a series where you're playing back-to-back games, essentially, and it's at the end of the season. But this Preds team seems to perform when their backs are pushed against the wall and nobody thinks that they can win. I mean, what have we talked about this Preds team all season long? Is it's been a roller coaster season. They'll have this incredible win, and then they'll have this really just embarrassing, disappointing loss to a team that we know they're better than. For instance, last night's game. And I think that this win against the Avalanche kind of got hidden in Nashville sports news because it was the same night as the AJ Brown trade.
Yep.
And so the AJ Brown trade happens, and then I see that the Preds are down. I'm like, oh, they're not going to win, right? They don't have UC. You kind of count them out. And then I wake up the next morning and it's like, what? Matt Duchene? He got the winning goal in a shootout? Like, what? They beat the Avalanche. And then you're like, oh, morale super, super high. And then you find out UC has a high ankle sprain, and then morale goes down, and then they lose to the Coyotes. So listen, I don't know. Somebody just texted in, is Pekka in town? He's already filed his retirement papers, so I don't think you can add.
Maybe we should give him a false mustache and he can disguise himself as David Riddick. We'll see. Who knows? Yeah.
A lot to think about. I'm not counting him out fully because, hey, in this Stanley Cup race, you can really, really see anything happen, but it's going to be pretty hard. It's going to be pretty hard to beat this Avalanche team in a series, especially with your starting goaltender.
The first period will be a great indicator as how the series is going to go, because if they, Elijah and I've talked, and you too, Michelle, but if they don't start the first period good, then it's not going to end well, I don't think. But I have good hopes for him. I mean, Connor Ingram's been playing great in Milwaukee, so I mean, and to bring him up, I mean, got to make the best of a tough situation, but you know, you got to play the cards you're dealt, so got to start better, got to play better, right?
Yep, and that's a good point too, because like this Preds team, like you don't want to have to bury yourself against a team like the Avalanche and have to come back from large deficits, because that's just so hard to do in a playoff type setting when the game slows down and becomes a lot more physical. But if there's a team that can handle the physicality, it's the team that led the league in penalties and minutes or in fighting majors. And the Preds have proven they're not afraid of some physicality. And one last thing on my end here for the Preds thought, Matt Duchene plays well against his former team. He has 9 goals and 9 career games against the Colorado Avalanche.
Come on, Dutchie.
Every Dutchie game against the Avalanche has been a Matt Duchene revenge game. They're going to need 4 good Matt Duchene revenge games to be able to squeeze out of the first round of the playoffs. Michelle, done a fantastic show. We could have done 6 hours today because of all the news going on in Nashville
Pro
Sports. It is an overload. Thank you all for tuning in. Thanks for everyone that texted into the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Enjoy the interactions as always. I'm Elijah Campbell. She's Michelle Knezovic. Jared Cassie behind the glass saying so long. We'll talk to you 9 a.m. next week.